What I'd like to address this morning is a concept which I've become familiar with here in Yeshiva many, many years ago when I studied under Rav Soloveitchik, Zichron Livracha. You may or may not know, but I'm a fan, an admirer of what's called the Brisket Derech. And one of the cornerstones of the Brisket Derech is a concept called Mitzvah Kiyumit. If you could jot that down, if you're taking notes, that's going to be the key concept today. Mitzvah Kiyumit, spelled Kuf Yud Vav Mem Yud Tav, Kiyumit. What does that mean, Mitzvah Kiyumit? Let me try to give you my understanding of this concept and then raise a question. A Mitzvah Kiyumit is neither an obligation, nor is it something that's simply neutral or powerful or meaningless. For example, the Torah has enumerated many, many mitzvot, many obligations, the goal of which, the purpose of which, is to fulfill the will of God as expressed in the Torah. In such a case, I have no choice in the matter. As an observant Jew, I have to, and I'm required to fulfill my obligations thereof. On the other extreme end of the spectrum, there are many actions that human beings are involved in that are completely devoid of a mitzvah content. They're simply a matter of choice. If I were to attend, let's say, a dinner, and the waiter offered me a choice of chicken or meat, ostensibly, that would be my personal decision. I would not be rewarded for a decision one way or the other. It's powerful, it's neutral, it's totally disconnected to a mitzvah act. Somewhere in between lies a concept called mitzvah kiyumit. This is a mitzvah which I'm not obligated to perform, but yet, if I opt to do so, I will be duly rewarded. Once again, there's no chiyuv, it's not a mitzvah chiyuvit, it's optional, but nevertheless, if I decide to perform that mitzvah, I will be mekabel schar. So it's not parva, in the sense that I don't get rewards for deciding what to eat for dinner necessarily, unless it's a shmarta modis nafshel secha. In this case of a mitzvah kiyumit, and I'll give you one prime example in just a minute, I will be rewarded if I opt for the mitzvah. But on the other hand, it's lacking the chiyuv, the obligation, the element of chovah. And as I said to you at the outset, I was introduced to this concept many, many years ago. But frankly speaking, I was always baffled, always confused by this concept. Let me first give you one example, halacha lemaisa, according to the great Gaon, Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, of a mitzvah kiyumit. Perhaps we'll get into it a little greater in depth at the end of the shiur, but if you turn to number 24, which is actually the last source on your pages, I've taken out a paragraph from a very, very famous tshuva, Rav Moshe Feinstein, regarding the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Moshe addresses the very famous question about the fact that the Rambam omits this great mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael in his enumeration of the Taryag, in his formulation of the Sefer HaMitzvot, and why did the Rambam do so? And Rav Moshe offers a very unique approach. Again, relying heavily on the Brisket Derech, the concept of mitzvah kiyumit. According to Rav Moshe, there's no obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael, according to the Rambam at least. On the other hand, if one chooses to live in Eretz Yisrael, he will certainly be duly rewarded because it's a mitzvah kiyumit. So we're lacking again the element of obligation, but on the other hand, we have a kiyum mitzvah. We have fulfilled the mitzvah and there will be matan tzchar. This is just one example of many in which the Gedolei Yisrael, the Rashi Yeshivas, apply this logic of mitzvah kiyumit. And here's what bothers me. We have a concept, a phrase in the Talmud, mimonavshach, no matter how you slice the cake. If our goal, if our purpose on this world is to fulfill the will of God as expressed in the mitzvot of Hashem, and if you're telling me that I will be duly rewarded for, in this case, just as one example, a case in point of living in Eretz Yisrael according to Rav Moshe's pshat, it means that this is the will of God. If it was irrelevant to the will of God, I certainly wouldn't be rewarded for it. The matan tzchar itself is a proof positive that this is a mitzvah. And if my goal in life is to fulfill that which is the will of God, then why denigrate this mitzvah to a second-rate status and call it a mitzvah kiyumit? Why divorce it or strip it of its categorical definition as a chiyuv? After all, if my goal in life and the purpose for which I'm here is to fulfill the will of God, and that will of God is embodied in the mitzvah, then if it's a mitzvah, and the proof is that I'll be rewarded for it, then it should be a chiyuv. What sense does it make? What logical justification is there to call it a mitzvah kiyumit and, as I said before, to reduce and downgrade the level of this mitzvah? If it's God's will that I live in Eretz Yisrael, I should be duly rewarded, and I will be duly rewarded, then it should be a chiyuv. That's what I should be seeking out. Every opportune moment, every opportunity to fulfill the will of God, that's what a chiyuv is all about. What does it mean then to have an optional mitzvah? A mitzvah which I could either choose to perform and fulfill or not. And when I was young and easy, I wrote this question to one of my rebbeim, perhaps you've heard of him, Rav Nissen Alpert, Olav Shalom. He was a great Rosh Hashiva and I loved him very much. And he sent me back an answer, which I still have, his ksav yad, his manuscript, his letter, and he said, I don't understand the concept myself. So misery loves company. I felt very good about it in the sense that I wasn't the only one on the face of the earth who was confused about this fundamental concept called mitzvah kiyumit. Having said that as the background, or perhaps the introduction to today's discussion, I'd like to go on and analyze a few issues. Let me begin with the mitzvah of Torah study. Now, of course, as I said before, the mitzvah of Torah study is incumbent upon men. V'shinantam levanecha. It's an absolute obligation, there's no question about it, for every male. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Ches, Kol Ish Yisrael, Bein Ani, Bein Asher, whether he's healthy, whether he's sick, whether he's young, whether he's old, Chayav Lilmo Torah, he has to study Torah. So there's no question that we're dealing with an absolute obligation in the case of men vis-a-vis Talmud Torah. As I said, I'd like to get back to women later on. Nevertheless, if we're careful about reading the Rambam, and I'd like to call your attention to number 4 on your page. After the Rambam's introduction, in which he includes every man in this chiyuv, in this obligation of Talmud Torah, he defines the nature of the mitzvah. And he says, towards the end of the quote in number 4, chayav, you might want to underline it, chayav l'kva lo zman l'talmud Torah bayom u'balayla, by day and by night. Shenemar v'yigita bo yomam v'olayla. Now, Gvirotai, I want to raise a very fundamental question about the nature of Talmud Torah in this mitzvah. And what I want you to do is, after you hear my question, take a look again in the Rambam. As you know, the Rambam is almost perfect as a writer. I mean, so clear and so precise about his choice of words. That's why the whole of the study of the Rambam is so fascinating, to be medayik in the Rambam. But here's my question, and then let's be medayik in the Lashon Rambam. What is the nature, the scope of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, Torah study as it is incumbent upon men? Is it A or B? My first possibility is that a person has to dedicate himself to Torah study at every possible moment, every free moment that he has at his disposal. Obviously, there are moments in which he has to tend to his biological needs, maybe for a parnos, etc., etc. But barring those moments, is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah an ongoing, absolute chiyuv, a mitzvah midit, every free moment I'm obligated in Torah study? That's possibility number 1. B, is it perhaps that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah only generates the following very limited, very prescribed chiyuv, and that is that I have to set up an interval of time, I have to be koveya itim, whether that interval is a half hour a day, an hour a day, both by day and by night, because of the pasuk v'yigita bo yomam v'layla, both day and night generate a chiyuv of Talmud Torah. But this, in the second definition, is not an ongoing absolute chiyuv, every free moment, every spare moment I have. Rather, I can fulfill my obligation, as I said before, just by being koveya itim l'Torah. Now, if you will, let's go back to the text of the Rambam and see what he says. Chayav likvoa lozman l'talmud Torah. My friends, how do you read that Rambam? Is it A or B? Is it an absolute ongoing mitzvah every moment, or is it kviut zman, to set aside moments of time? Oh, are you helping me out, ladies? I need help. It's clearly B. I mean, the Rambam could have used a whole different language if he meant to tell me that this is an ongoing, perpetual mitzvah every moment that I have at my disposal. He would have said, Chayav Adam, not likvoa lo zman, but rather he would have said, Chayav Adam lilmod, kol hayom v'kol alayla. He never says, kol hayom v'kol alayla, but rather likvoa lo zman. The emphasis here is on setting up an interval of time. The emphasis, perhaps, is on the word zman. How much is a zman? The Rambam doesn't, unfortunately, doesn't spell it out for me, but something that has a chashivut, a certain significance of an interval of time that I've designated for Torah study. The Rambam goes on to stipulate that it's not enough to do that once a day, you have to do it twice a day. The halakhic day is divided into two parts, yom and laila. Each part of the day of that 24-hour unit requires of me to set aside a certain interval of time for the study of Torah. Now, that per se is okay, and if that's the Shittas of Rambam, we'll accept it, we'll embrace it. But I open up a Gemara in Menachot, which is on your list, number 6. And based on the Pasuk in Yoshua, number 5, I get the exact opposite impression. The very famous Gemara in Masechet Menachot relates the following story. There was a Jew by the name of Ben Dama. He was the nephew of the Gadol Hador of Rabbi Yishmael. And he raised the following question to his uncle. He said to him, Uncle Yishmael, somebody like me, and he goes ahead and he describes himself, Ben Tom, Shalamadati es kol haTorah kula. Again, who could say that about himself? It sounds like guy. But he says he covered the entire gamut. You know, the library in those days was a little bit more limited. You know, I suppose there was, you know, Chamisha Chumshei Torah, there was Tanakh, there was Sifra Sifri, Mechilta, there was Mishnayos a little bit later on, but Rabbi Yehuda Nasi edited the Mishnah, but there wasn't that extensive library that we have today. We have to dedicate a whole building here at YU for the library. For Hashem, we have so many Sfarim. But in any event, it's quite an impressive feat, and Ben Dama says about himself, Kigona Noshala Marati is Kola Torah Kula. And he raises the following question to his uncle. He says, is it permissible for me to now dedicate my study time, to the study of Greek philosophy? That was the philosophy of the time. And presumably, since he had studied and he had covered the entire Torah, he was now exempt from that mitzvah of Torah study, and he could dedicate his time to the study of philosophy. Rabbi Shmuel gave him a very fascinating answer, as you'll see in number 6. And I apologize about this mic. I'm just not used to speaking into a mic. I don't know exactly, you know, where I'm supposed to put my mouth and so forth. So, in fact, I think I'd do better without the mic. But in any event, he says like that, Kara Olav Es HaMikra Azeh. He quoted this pasuk in Yoshua. Lo Yamush Sefer HaTorah Azeh Mipicha. The Sefer Torah, the study of Torah, should never be forsaken. It should never be outside of your mouth. But rather, the Gita Bo, Yoshua says, Yomam V'layla. Says Rabbi Shmuel to his nephew, you want to study Chochmah Yevanit? Say Yubdok, go check it out. Sha'a She'ena Lomen Hayom V'Lomen HaLayla. Go find a time period that's neither day or night. Maybe he meant Beit HaShemashot, I don't know. U'lemod Bo Chochmah Yevanit. And basically, the upshot of Rabbi Shmuel's answer to Ben Dama was, you think you're a big shot, you've covered the entire Torah Kula, but that doesn't exempt you from the ongoing mitzvah of Torah study. Perhaps what Rabbi Shmuel was emphasizing is that Torah study is not just a means to an end, i.e. to acquire Torah knowledge, but it's a mitzvah unto itself. It's meaningful per se. Involve yourself in Torah study. And when? Lo yamush, yoma, halayla. Go out and study Chochmah Yevanit. Yeah, if you can find a time that doesn't fit either the category of day or night. If we take a step back and ask ourselves, how did Rabbi Shmuel interpret the pasuk V'Gita Bo? Certainly we'll come to the conclusion that he had a different interpretation than that we saw in the Rambam. Now Rabbi Shmuel is a Tana, so the Rambam really has to give way to a Tana. Rabbi Shmuel understood that the mitzvah of Torah study is an ongoing one. Every moment. Lo yamush.
Yomam halayla.
There's no time for anything else.
Not even the great philosophers of Socrates and Plato and Aristotle of that time. So my first question to you is, how does the Rambam square with the Gemara Menachot? How could the Rambam, again in quotation marks, contradict the Gemara Menachot, because that's what it looks like on the surface of the matter, and postulate that the mitzvah of Torah study, according to the Rambam, is only to be koveya zman min hayom min halayla? Whereas Rabbi Shmuel clearly understood the pasuk as referring to an ongoing mitzvah that encompasses every moment of day and night. But my friends, this question gets even more severe when we read the Rambam himself. The first Rambam that we read in number 4 was the Rambam in Perek Aleph Mehilchos Talmud Torah. However, let's take a look at the Rambam's own formulation of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah just 2 chapters later in Perek Gimel. And this you'll find in number 7. By the way, in most printings of the Rambam, to get from Perek Aleph to Perek Gimel means just flipping one page. It's very hard to believe that the Rambam, in flipping one page, could have forgotten what he himself had written in Perek Aleph. Says the Rambam in Perek Gimel, Mishin Esa'oli Bo, L'Kayem Mitzvah Zuka Ra'ui. And the only mitzvah that the Rambam is addressing is the mitzvah of Torah study. V'liot Muchtar V'Keter Torah, that's an interesting phrase unto itself. But look how the Rambam defines the mitzvah here. Lo yasiach da'ato l'dvarim acherim. No hesech hadas. There's no opportunity, there's no chance that you can think about other things, digress into other areas. It's got to be a single-minded, all-encompassing focus and concentration on Torah study, to the exclusion of everything else. Well, that's certainly not the impression we got just 2 chapters earlier in Perek Aleph. I can certainly fulfill my theme to be koveya zman min hayom min halayla and still have about 18 hours a day free to involve myself in a host of different endeavors. And yet, here the Rambam clearly states, lo yasiach daito l'dvarim acherim. There's no time for anything else. It's a total dedication, a focus on the Torah, on the study of Torah, to the exclusion of everything else. So we have 2 questions on the Rambam. Question number 1, how to square the Rambam with Rabbi Yishmael in Menachot, V'gita bo yom v'layla. And question number 2, how to square the Rambam with himself from Perek Gimel back to Perek Aleph. There seems to be an open contradiction. Let me add a few other perplexing questions into the cholent. Number 1, the pasuk in Navi, in Malachi, uses what I would call a redundancy, a certain double language. It says, V'shavtem uri'item ben tzadik l'rasha ben eved elokim l'asher lo avado. The Navi has a dichotomy, a contrast, if you will, number 1, between a tzadik and a rasha, number 2, between one who serves God and one who does not. And Chazal are very concerned about this double classification. Why did the Navi need both a tzaddik and a rosh on the one hand, and an eved elokim and asher lo avado on the other? This is the Gemara number 9 in Chagigah. The Gemara asks again because the clock is moving, I'm going to make it short. Hainu tzaddik, hainu oved elokim? Why the double language? Hainu rasha, hainu asher lo avado? What are these different categories? And after a long pilpul in the Gemara, the conclusion of the Gemara, which I have for you here, is Ein adome shona pirko mea pa'amim l'shona pirko mea v'yechot. There are 2 students in the academy. One is an Ovei Elokim, and one is lo avado. He does not serve Hashem. The one who's an Ovei Elokim is not satisfied with reviewing his lessons 100 times. But rather he adds 101st. The other student reviews his lesson 100 times. He's lo oved elokim. He hasn't served Hashem. And the question begs itself. For the extra 101st time, you know, I say it was halavai that we could review our lessons 2, 3, 4 times. 100 times the student reviewed his lesson. And still he's a lo oved elokim. Who's uniquely specified and described by this description, this great adjective of an Oved Elokim, that's the Talmud who sets up another additional time to review his studies. 101st. What's the big deal, 101st time? I want to ask another question. We mentioned before the concept that the Rambam touches, we skirted upon it. Let's focus on it a little better. The concept of Keter Torah. If you take a look at the Gemara in Shabbat, the very famous Gemara about Nasa and Nishma, which is number 11 on your page, the Gemara tells us that the time that the Jews accepted the Torah, Nasa and Nishma, they got credit for both Nasa and Nishma, and 600,000 Malachi Ashores came down, as it were, from Shamayim, and they crowned each and every Jew with not one crown of Torah, but two crowns. One Keneged Nasa and the other Keneged Nishma. Tragically, as we read in this week's parsha, these crowns were removed from the Jewish people following the Chet HaEgel. In fact, according to Chazal, it seems that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain towards the end of Parshas Kitisa, we just read it hours ago, less than a day ago, and Karan Ar Panav, there were radiant rays that shone from his head. These were the Ketarim that were transferred from Bnei Yisrael after Chet HaEgel and given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And my question to you is the following. Why this emphasis on Keter, on crowns? What is the significance of a crown of Torah? Why do the Jewish people merit two crowns? Why is it that these crowns are removed? The Jews were stripped of these crowns at the time of Chet HaEgel. And why were they transferred to Moshe Rabbeinu? Why does the Rambam, as we saw before, emphasize Keter Torah? Why this focus on the crown of Torah? In fact, although the Rambam doesn't say it explicitly, I think he's implying Keter Torah in a different place. Just find this for you. Take a look at number 22. This is a Rambam in Hilchos Tefillin, where the Rambam describes the greatness of Rav. Rav was a first generation Amora, a Talmud of Rav Yudah Nasi. Says the Rambam, I bolded it, Amru alav al Rav, Talmidosa Rabbeinu HaKadosha, Kol Yamav, Lo Ra'u, nobody saw him, Shalach Arba Amot, he didn't walk 4 cubits below Torah, below Tzitzit, below Tefillin. Now I understand that you can say about someone he didn't walk a step without tefillin on his head, without tzitzis on his body, but what does it mean without Torah? What does it mean? Did Rav walk around 24/7 with a sefer Torah? That's a mitzvah that's incumbent upon a king, on a melech, but it doesn't apply to Rav. But rather I believe that the Rambam is intimating at the concept of Keter Torah, the crown of Torah. Again, not in the physical sense of a physical crown that you could buy in a Judaica store, but rather a symbolic crown, the crown of Torah, and Rav was constantly devoted to that crown of Torah. Nobody could ever catch Rav without his crown of Torah. So to speak, he wore it all the time. But once again, as I asked you before, why the emphasis on the crown of Torah? And finally, one last question. How many brachot do we recite on a mitzvah, what we call berchat mitzvah? That's a general question. And more specifically, in the case of the mitzvah Torah study, how many brachot do we recite? So regarding the first question, that's number one on your page, we're very stingy about giving out brachot. You know, one ticket per person, one bracha per mitzvah. A mitzvah never gets more than one bracha. And that's very clear in the Rambam and Hilchos Brachos. But yet, if you take a look at the Rambam and Hilchos Tefillah with regard to Birkas HaTorah number 2, the Rambam clearly states that with regard to Torah study, there are 3 brachot. The first of which is Al Divrei Torah, which is the Rambam and the Sfaradim, that is the Nusach. Our Nusach Ashkenazim is Lasok B'Divrei Torah, but be that as it may, that's the first mitzvah. Classical mitzvah fits all the descriptions and requirements of the Birchas HaMitzvah, classic Asher Kitshanu B'Mitzotav Tzivanu. Then we add a second bracha. Varevna Hashem Elokeinu et Divrei Torahcha B'Finu, etc., which ends with the word Lishma, that we should study the Torah for its own sake. Baruch Ata Hashem Lamei Torah Liyavo Yisrael. The third bracha, which is Asher Bachar Banu, is really not connected to the mitzvah of Torah study per se. In fact, you can recite that bracha anytime during the day. That's Asher Bachar Banu. That's not what we're focusing on. But basically, to call your attention to the first two of the 3 brachot, both of which are intrinsically connected to the mitzvah of Torah study. And to raise the following question. Why does this mitzvah justify, why does it deserve not one bracha, but two bracha? What's unique about this mitzvah that justifies two brachot? And here I'd like to share with you something I heard from the Rav. It's actually been published in a book called Shi'urim L'Zecha Abamari. I didn't have the time to type it all out, so it's just number 13 in case you ever want to look it up yourself. But again, you're not going to find the text, so you'll have to rely on me to give it over to you the way I understood. The Rav establishes the following fundamental chidush. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah is not one mitzvah, but rather two. And of course, that's going to justify two brachot. So the Rav formulates the following. The first fundamental aspect of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is what we call Yediyas HaTorah, meaning to study Torah for the sake of knowledge, to try to acquire Torah knowledge, accumulate knowledge of Torah. This is an intellectual, cognitive mitzvah, requires full focus of the mind to try to understand Torah, to analyze it, and to somehow store it in one's memory bank. But the Rav goes on to say that there's an entirely different element in Torah study. And if you will, a mitzvah unto itself. He calls it Kiddush Hagafa. Let me try to explain. Literally translated, it means the sanctification of the student of Torah. And the Rav goes on to say that he who dedicates himself to the study of Torah, lishma, for its own sake, will be endowed with a certain level of kedusha, of sanctity, that elevates him, that has an impact on his soul, that transforms his personality. An individual before he studies Torah is not the same as the one who studies Torah. We have many, many mitzvot in the Taryag, and they're all significant. But what's unique about this particular mitzvah is the ability, nay, the obligation to do this mitzvah and be sanctified, be transformed by the mitzvah itself. I can take a lulav, I can eat matzah, it's a great mitzvah. But it doesn't transform the individual. There's no kiddush hagav. And to illustrate his point, the Rav quotes a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which you'll see on the bottom of your page 14. Rabbi Meir Omer, kol ho'osek v'torah lishma, zoche l'dvarim harbe. He who dedicates himself to study Torah lishma will merit many, many different things. And I've emphasized a few of them. Nikra rea, he's a friend. Ahuv, he's beloved. Ohev et hamakom, ohev et habriot, misamech et hamakom, misamech et habriot, malbashto anava v'yirah, machshar to liot tzadik v'chassid v'yashar v'neman, etc., etc., etc. Rabbi Meir clearly delineates and emphasizes the power of Torah study on the individual who dedicates himself to Torah lishma. He's not the same person. He's an anav. He's a tzaddik. People are interested in hearing what he has to say because he has this close relationship with the Torah that has elevated his soul and his personality. This, the Mishnah of Rabbi Meir, is an indication of the second kiyum of Talmud Torah, namely Kiddush Hagafa. And the Rav concludes his discussion by saying, this is why the mitzvah of Talmud Torah requires not one bracha, but two. The first bracha, la'asok b'divrei Torah, or al divrei Torah, is a bracha on the first kiyum of Talmud Torah, the kiyum of the mitzvah of Yediyas HaTorah, of knowledge. As we said before, the cognitive endeavor to understand Torah and acquire its knowledge. The second brach, on the other hand, focuses on the second mitzvah of Talmud Torah, namely Kiddush HaGavra, Hitkadshut, Hitalut, to be elevated, to be impacted by the Torah, to study the Torah Lishma. And indeed, that's why the second bracha culminates with the word Lishma. Because through the Torah of Lishma, the study of Torah Lishma, man achieves his greatest glory, and that is Kiddush Hagavra, hitkatshut. I would like to add that if the study of Torah has such an impact on a person, perhaps we could understand the Gemara in Masechet Makot, which is number 15 on your page. Rava in Masechet Makot bemoans the fact that the Jews in Bavel had a tremendous respect for the Sefer Torah, but not an equal measure of respect for a Talmud Chacham. Kama Tipshay, he calls them Tipshim, meaning they missed the point. Inshi Dekaini Mekame Sefer Torah, they stand up for Sefer Torah, you'll see it. It's become even more in vogue now. People will stand up in front of a Sefer Torah from 100 yards away. V'lo Kaini Mekame Gavri Rabba. But when they see a Torah scholar, they don't even stand up for him. Says Rabba, they got it wrong. And he illustrates this. The Torah itself says that if a person violates one of the laws of the Torah, he will be punished with 40 lashes. The Otu Rabbanon Batsu Chada, and the Rabbanon omitted one and they reduced it to the number of 39. So who's greater, the Sefer Torah that says 40, or the Chachamim who say 39? But why? Why is there so much emphasis on respect for a Torah scholar? Why is it that when a Torah scholar enters into a gathering of people, all of a sudden it's quiet? Everyone stands up. The answer is, because the Torah scholar is not just an individual who's dedicated himself to a mitzvah amongst many, but rather an individual who's dedicated to this very unique mitzvah of Kiddush HaKayim. Through the study of Torah, being elevated to the Kedusha of Kedusha Satorah. If this be the case, then perhaps we can explain the concept of Keter Torah. What is this emphasis, I asked before, on the crown of Torah? Once again, if Torah was a mitzvah like many others, the concept of a crown would be totally off base. Erroneous. It wouldn't be applicable at all. We don't find someone who takes a lulav or an esrog or sits in the sukkah, he's crowned with a keter of lulav or sukkah. But in the case of Torah study, the crown represents the transformation of the individual. It's not a physical crown. It symbolizes the new status of a person as a result of Torah study lishma. And I want to add one point on the side, which is really not so relevant, but if you'll allow me, I want to tell you a story. My sister Judy may remember this story. My father, Zichron Levracha, our father, used to attend the Rav Shir in the Moriah Synagogue on the west side every Tuesday night. And one time, after the Shir, my father came up to the Rav, and he said to Rebbe, "I'm afraid." "What are you afraid of, Rabbi Person?" "I'm afraid that I won't receive reward for coming to hear your shiur." The Rav looked up, astounded to hear that from Rabbi Person. So my father explained, "Rabbi, you don't understand. There are a lot of things I could be doing this evening on a Tuesday night." He mentioned a few, we won't go into detail here. "But I have no desire to do that, because I come to your shiurim and I have physical pleasure from hearing your shiurim." And the Rav, without blinking, snapped in Yiddish, "Das heißt Torah Lishma." That's what Torah Lishma is all about. So let no one entertain the possibility that Torah study is an obligation, a burden, meant to be cumbersome. Of course, you're all familiar with the world-famous introduction of the Gleital, the Sukkot Shabbat Rebbe, to his great magnum opus on the Lama Tet Melachot, in which he says what a mistake it is that people think that to study Torah Lishma, you have to deny yourself pleasure, the intellectual enjoyment of creative thinking and analysis. He says that's false. He says, on the contrary, the more pleasure you have from Torah study, the more of an impact it has on your soul. And then he goes on for a paragraph into Chassidut, which I don't understand. The person is transformed by Torah study, as we said before. If this be the case, then perhaps We can explain the Rambam in Perek Aleph and the seemingly contradictory Rambam in Perek Gimel, Mehilchos Talmud Torah. The Rambam has set two different standards regarding the obligation of Torah study. The first, in Perek Aleph, is the objective, absolute requirement of Torah study incumbent upon every single Jewish male, which requires, as the Rambam says, l'kvo lo zman min hayom u min halayla. No one, no matter how young, how old, how sick, how rich or poor he is, can claim an exemption from that fundamental, absolute chiyuv of kviyut zman min hayom u min halayla. That's Perek Aleph. But if you'll take a look carefully at Perek Gimel, which is, by the way, the perek in which, and I don't have it here on the page, the Rambam opens up with the famous quote of Shlosha Ksarim Nichtu Ben Yisrael. There are three crowns in which the Jewish people were crowned. There's Keser Malchus and Keser Kahuna and Keser Torah. And the Rambam goes on to say that Keser Torah is greater than the other two Ksarim. And in that very perek, as we saw earlier, the Rambam says, Mishin Esa'oli Bo, L'kayim mitzvah zukha ra'ui. What mitzvah is the Rambam talking about? The Rambam is addressing the mitzvah of Keter Torah, the mitzvah of Kiddush HaGavra. At this point, the Rambam says the standards for Torah study are that much greater and that much higher. We're no longer dealing with an objective standard incumbent upon every single Jew. What we're talking about now is a person whose heart prompts him. Something moves him from within to study Torah Lishma, to desire Keter Torah, to be elevated by the Torah, to be transformed. Says the Rambam, don't fool yourself. If you're interested in Keter Torah, if that's on your agenda, lo yasiyach daito lidvarim acherim. There's no time for juggling Keter Torah with rechush, with mammon, with a host of pleasures in life. He who is interested and has set for himself the goal of Keter Torah has to understand that it's a single-minded, absolute dedication to Torah study to the exclusion of everything else. However, says the Rambam, Mishin is our only bond. He whose heart comes. This means that there's a fundamental difference between the two mitzvahs that we described in Talmud Torah. The first, namely the intellectual mitzvah of studying Torah, is incumbent upon every Jew, and the Rambam has outlined and formulated the standard and the requirement in Perek Aleph for that mitzvah. The second mitzvah is not incumbent upon every single Jew, but rather, Mishin is the only bow, he whose heart prompts. I would like to take a few minutes to try to answer the following question. Where does the Rambam derive this concept of Mishin is the only book? Where did it come from? Is the Rambam inventing this concept? Yesh Me'ayim? There must be some source in the Torah, some basis for it. And I think the answer lies in the Parshiyot that we've been reading over the last few weeks, starting with Parshat Truma, which requires of the Jew to come forward with a contribution for the sake of the building of the Mishkan. And if you recall, the people of Israel successfully responded to that great campaign up to the point where we'll see in Parashat, in next week's parasha, where it says, "V'amalachai ta dayam." I always say that probably was the only time in Jewish history that a fundraiser really reached its goal. But the Jews really came through with flying colors, and they brought clay kesef and clay zav. But there's one fascinating phrase at the beginning of Parsha Truma. The Torah says, "Mikol ish asher yidvenu libo tikhu et trumati." The Brisker Rav, in his commentary on Chumash, points out that there's something very unique that applies to this mitzvah, and only to this mitzvah. It's an exception to the general rule, the mitzvah of contributing to the Mishkan. He says, with regard to every other mitzvah, I hope I won't be bursting your bubbles if I tell you that the Torah is not very democratic. And the principle is kofina on mitzvot. If a person has the wherewithal to fulfill a mitzvah, even the mitzvah of tzedakah, and refuses to do so, we're not a democracy. Kofina on mitzvot, we can force a person to fulfill his obligation. Says the Brisker Rebbe, but there's one mitzvah where there's no kfiyah. There's no forcing, there's no enforcing the law. And that's the mitzvah of truma, of contributing to the building of the Mishnah. Says the Brisker Rav, from whence do we derive this conclusion? Because this Torah stipulates the condition we call Ish Asher Yidvenu Libo Tikhu Trumati. If a person has the wherewithal to give tzedakah and he refuses to do so, the halach in Yoredei Hilchos Tzedakah is that Beit Din Yardin L'Nechasav, we will confiscate his possessions for the sake of tzedakah. But not so in the contribution for the building of the Mishkan. We call Ish Asher Yidvenu Libo. Nedivut HaLev is the precondition for this mitzvah. It's got to come from within. It's got to be, my heart prompts me to come forward, to contribute to the building of the Mishkan. And Gvirotai, I'd like to ask you today, why is that so? The Brisker Rav does not address the question of why. That's not his style. But I would like to have the chutzpah of addressing that question. Why is this mitzvah singled out? As the Torah says explicitly, Nidivut HaLev. And the answer, I believe, lies a few psukim later. V'yasuli Midash V'shachanti B'tocha. The goal of this mitzvah, the mitzvah contributing to the building of the Mishkan, is V'shachanti B'tocha. Let me explain. According to the Kabbalists, God lives in the seventh Zvul up there in Shnei Shamayim. And the Shekhinah says to Klal Yisrael, we can have a long distance relationship. Call me long distance if you will, that's fine. But if you want, if you so desire it, I'm willing to take the Shekhinah and create a much more intimate, close relationship with Klal Yisrael. If you desire it, then I will rest my Shekhinah amongst you in a small, humble abode called the Mishkan, so that we can have a close relationship. Of course, a close relationship to Shekhinah generates obligations. It certainly causes us to live, requires us to live on a high standard. And the question is, do we want to take advantage of this privilege? And so the Torah says, we call Ish Asher Yidvenu Libo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares, there's no enforcement with regard to Shekhinah. You have two options. I'm not going to say, you must build a Mishkan, you must achieve that relationship with Shekhinah. For my part, it could be okay. A long distance relationship is fine. But if you desire it, if you want to come close, if you want the Shekhinah to be Shorah amongst you, if there's the Divus Lev, then Mikol Ish Asher Yidvenu Libo Tikhu et Trumati. I'd like to give the following mashal. You know, we have in Eretz Yisrael two institutions called the Vaseret. But it doesn't matter in this case whether it's the men or the women. The young people have to get invited for Shabbat very often. Of course, the yeshiva is always open, but it's nice to go away for Shabbos. Is that so? And there are two ways of doing it. You can call up someone and say, as many of the youngsters do, you know, I'm your cousin's uncle's sister's brother's dog's friend, you know, and I'd like to get invited for Shabbos. Or you could just simply knock on the door and say, as we say, Yiddish, ich bin du, I'm here, like it or not, I'm packing in. Which is preferable? And the answer is obvious, and it doesn't require any great thought. A person wants an invitation. Nobody wants to come and impose themselves, I'm your guest, whether you like it or not. And so it is in the Nimshal with Hashros HaShechinah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? I'm willing to be a guest on your turf, but invite me in. I'm not going to impose myself. I'm not going to force myself upon you for the sake of that relationship between Knesset Yisrael and the Shekhinah. It's got to be Nedivus HaLev. If this be the case, then I think we could solve our problem. Where did the Rambam derive this concept of Misha Nisa'ol Libo regarding Keter Torah? The answer, I believe, is that since the goal of Keter Torah, its purpose, is to come close to Kedusha, to Shekhinah, V'yasuli Mikdash V'shachanti V'socham, every individual can become a Mishkan for Shekhinah through the study of Torah. If the Torah elevates us, it means it connects us to the Shekhinah. Chazal say in many places, when two students sit down to Torah study, nay, even one student who studies Torah alone, the Shekhinah is there. That's the cue of Keter Torah, of Kiddushat Gavra. What is that sanctity of the individual who studies Torah, if not his close relationship with Shekhinah? The Jews received the Keter Torah, this consciousness of Torah, at the time of Kabbalah Sator when they recited Nasa v'Nishma. They lost that level of Kedusha and forfeited their crowns at the time of Chet Ha'Egel, and they were transferred from Moshe to Rosh Rabbeinu. Ki Karan Or Pnei Moshe, those radiant, glorious rays of light that shone from Moshe Rabbeinu's face were nothing more than a physical expression of the Kesed Torah of the Shekhinah that was Shorah on Moshe Rabbeinu. And so it is that every single Jew has the ability to be Muchtar B'Kesed Torah, Torah Tzivolon of Moshe Marasha Kehilas Yaakov, to the entire Kehila. No one is excluded from Kesed Torah if he so desires it. But the Rambam says and stipulates this condition, it's got to be Misha Nisa'ol Libo. When it comes to the second dimension of Torah study and its mitzvah, there's no coercion. It's got to come from one's heart. One has to be motivated. One has to crave Torah study. In olden times, apparently, it was standard practice, it was the regular curriculum to review one's Torah study 100 times. Having done so, I fulfilled my obligation. You know, I checked in with my teacher. I can go home. But there's one individual, one student in the audience who says, I'm not going home. I have fulfilled the curriculum requirement, but I want to study the Torah 101st time. Because he craves Kesed Torah. He craves the Shekhinah. He can't live without it. He longs for it. And therefore he adds another round of Torah study. He's the Oved Elokim, as described by the Navi Malachi. And therefore I think we can answer our original question. What is a mitzvah kiyumit? Very perplexing. It's not an obligation, but yet I'll be rewarded. What's that all about? And as I told you, I asked Rav Alpert, he didn't give me much of an answer. It's a perplexing concept, yet so fundamental in Bris. You know, ladies, there are so many different ways of classifying mitzvot. Mitzvot aseh, mitzvot lo taseh, mitzvot shebemalo, mitzvot shebeguf. I would like to add a new classification to mitzvot. There's a mitzvah, sheyesh bo maisa, and then there's a mitzvah, sheyesh bo shechina. A mitzvah whose goal, whose power, is to convert a person into a mishkan of shechina, v'yasu li migdash v'shachanti v'sochah. But with one condition. Whenever the mitzvah has as its essence, hashras hashechina, that close, intimate relationship with shechina, there's got to be nedivus alev. That's what a mitzvah kiyumis is all about. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not willing to impose upon us and enforce us with regard to these mitzvahs with a chiyum. And therefore, just as the mitzvah of Truma L'Mishkan, V'Shachanti V'Socham, Isha Sheyit V'Nolibo, and just as in the mitzvah of Torah study, the element of Kiddushat Gavra, which the Rambam introduces with the condition of Misha Nisa'ol Libo, because being Muchtar B'Kesed Torah means to have a close, intimate relationship with Shekhinah. The condition is, do I crave it? Do I want it? Do I long for it? There's no absolute obligation. There's no kofin al mitzvahs. And if this be the case, I would like to add a third mitzvah to this group. If we have Trumas HaMishkan,
And we have Talmud Torah for Kesed Torah. I believe that there's a third mitzvah. What's that? The mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael. Do you remember we started with the tshuva of Moshe Feinstein? Now listen, my friends, if you ask me if there's an obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael, I'm standing here on, what is it, 185th Street in Upper Manhattan. It's very difficult for me to postulate for you based on the Ramban and others that there's an absolute chiv. Everyone should be packing their bags before I finish my lecture in 5 minutes and getting on the next El Al plane with Nefesh B'Nefesh, making Aliyah. So I'm not going to tell you that. If you need a heter for living in Chutz Laretz, see me afterwards. I can come up with a few heterim. But we've missed the point. The point of Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah unit. And why is that so? Because Eretz Yisrael is Eli Hashem Elokecha Pa. Eretz Yisrael is a relationship to Shechina. Eretz Yisrael is not kfiyah, it's not enforcement. It's got to be the Nedivus HaLev. Sure, we can live in Washington Heights. Teaneck is wonderful. Passaic. Great places. I'll be next, in a few days, I'll be in Cleveland, Ohio. Wonderful community, great. Zionism is very strong in Cleveland, Ohio. But I have to ask the following question. Where is the Nedivus HaLev? Yeah, we can have this long-distance relationship. We can live all over the world. That's fine. I'll give you a heter for it. This is not a halachic question, per se. This is a question of mitzvah kiyumit. This is a question of, do I desire a higher level for myself? Do I want to be close to the Shekhinah? Close to the Beit HaMikdash? It's got to be Mishnah Sa'oli Bo. Because the essence of Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah to settle therein, is to be muhtar b'shechina, to be uplifted by the shechina that resides in that land, and to have that intimate relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this, my friends, is the question that each and every one of us has to ask themselves. Where do I stand as far as a mitzvah kiyumit is concerned? I mentioned at the outset to remind me of that women in Torah study, and I'll conclude with this. Perhaps the greatest revolution of our time in Orthodox Judaism is women in Torah study. It's just amazing. And without asking the question to what to attribute this, I'm going to say something different. I'm going to say is, you know, women are exempt from the mitzvah, so what's it all about? And the answer, I believe, depends on these two aspects of Torah study. If you were to ask me what is a woman's status as far as Torah study is concerned, and don't quote me on this, I'll deny I said it, I would say the following. With regard to the first dimension of Torah study, Yediyas HaTorah, men are obligated, not women. But I don't see the difference between men and women with regard to the close relationship to Shekhinah. To the extent in which a person could involve themselves, himself or herself, in Torah study, to be dedicated to Shekhinah, to be uplifted by the Torah, women participate as well as men. And therefore, it's a question of Nedivus HaLev. I want to take this opportunity to thank you all for coming. Wish you great hatzlacha and nachas. We hope to see you in Yirtzeh Hashem on future simchas, especially in the land of Eini Hashem Elokecha Bo. I wish you all the divut halev to come to be close to the Shekhinah of the Shachanti, the Sochal, so we'll see the building of the Beis HaMikdash prepared for the man of the Shachanti.